From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. The holiday season is upon us, and throughout this week, according to AAA, more than 50 million Americans will be traveling for Thanksgiving. That figure is expected to include more than 4 million people traveling by air between Wednesday and Sunday, nearly on par with levels before the pandemic. But the aviation industry is not what it was pre-COVID. Airfare is more expensive, and troubles with staffing and scheduling created an avalanche of problems for travelers over the summer. There could be more changes on the way, according to our first guest today, and those could have an effect on Illinois' smaller airports in places such as Peoria, the Quad Cities, and Springfield. Joining us now to talk about that and offer some tips for holiday travelers is Sheldon Jacobson. He's a professor of computer science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, and he's won awards for his research on airport security. Sheldon, welcome to the 21st Show.
Well, thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
And listeners, we want to invite you to join our conversation. What questions do you have about holiday air travel? Join the conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can tweet us, for now, at 21st Show, at 21ST Show. So I want to begin by asking a question about you and your work. How does a computer science professor get to be so involved in research around airport security and the state of air travel in general?
Well, I'm a data scientist, and I look through the lens of data, as well as using artificial intelligence to tease out insights about systems which have a lot of risk and uncertainty. And aviation security and air travel falls well within that rubric of activities.
Yeah, risk and uncertainty certainly does. All right, so we've been in this pandemic for 2.5 years now, speaking of risk and uncertainty. And there have been a number of bouts of, turbulence, as we mentioned a few minutes ago. How close is the industry to being at what you might consider a pre-pandemic normal?
Well, in terms of air travel volume, we are actually just about there. Over the last month, we've seen, 93, 94, 95% of the pre-pandemic travel levels. And as a result of that, when you go to the airport, it looks pretty much the same as what we saw in 2019. In fact, the last 3 days, the numbers of people being screened at airport security checkpoints has been at or above the 2019 levels for the comparable days. So we are pretty much there. The question is, how do we proceed to be able to get the kind of service that we expect from the airlines?
So that's, what would you say, an economist would say, that's the demand side. What about the supply side of that equation?
The supply side has been a little more challenging because the airlines, once the pandemic hit, they didn't want to be paying pilots, flight attendants, salaries. So what they did is they let them go. The problem is when pilots are released, they simply can't hop into a cockpit a year later and say, oh, everything is going to be fine. They have to be retrained. And this retraining process takes months, involving flight simulators. And what this means is that there's been a delay in being able to get the staffing levels to the level needed to meet the demand of air travel. And that's what caused many of the delays over the summer and is still happening right now, though to a lesser degree. The smaller airports, the regional airports, like in central Illinois, you'll notice that many of these airports, which used to have 4 flights, for example, to Chicago O'Hare, may only have 2 now, for example. And that means it limits your choices, also makes it harder to find good fares, but fares have gone up because of the oil prices. So this has become a very convoluted and complex situation for air travelers and the airlines at the same time.
Well, you mentioned, okay, fares have gone up because of oil prices, because of staffing shortages. What else is going into the high cost of flying these days?
Well, inflation is just making everything much more expensive. And once again, yield management is the techniques that airlines use to decide if the ticket that you're going to purchase will be $400, $600, or $800. And once those seats are filled at the 400 level, your choice is at the 600 or the 800 level. So basically, it's simple economics of supply and demand. And the airlines actually make more money when they have less flights available because they can get higher airfares for each of the travelers. And it's the dollars per mile travel that really determines their profitability. And the airlines are making a lot of money. In the last quarter, United made almost $1 billion of profit with, in fact, less volume.
That's fascinating. You spoke to the British paper, The Independent, back in March, and you mentioned that because of changes in who's traveling and who airlines see as valuable customers. And I imagine this, what you were just talking about, fewer passengers paying more money, that smaller, less popular airports might see fewer flights. Talk about that.
Well, what's happened is that the mixture of the travelers has changed tremendously. At one time, the business travelers really were the profit, and then the people who filled the seats after that were the leisure travelers. What's happened because of the pandemic is there's been a shifting in a mix. Because in corporate America, we're using much more virtual communication, the business travelers have not been there. The airlines still have to get resources and money and revenue to be able to keep themselves afloat because they have a tremendous fixed cost base. And as a result of that, what's happened is that airfares have gone up for everybody. So it's very hard to get that great deal that we saw 3, 4, 5 years ago. And the airlines know that they have to stay afloat. So there's this constant struggle and tension going on between servicing the passengers, giving them value, but also being able to be profitable. And the airlines ultimately have become quite profitable over the last year.
And do they have obligations to serve those smaller airports we were talking about, Champaign-Urbana, Willard Airport, for example?
Well, some of them have agreements with the federal government so that they actually get subsidies to make sure that these smaller airports do get air travel. But that has not stopped, in some cases, the airlines from simply cutting the travel out completely. Some of them in the Northeast have been affected. But the Midwest airports, like the ones in Champaign and Springfield and Peoria, what they've done is they see less opportunities and less choices in their flights. So instead of having 6 or 8 a day, we may only have 4 a day right now. So as a result, there are just less seats. You know, one option is drive to a larger airport, like, for example, Chicago O'Hare or Midway, like Indianapolis, and you will get better fares there. But it's also the inconvenience of traveling. And there's also a risk of just being on the road for a couple hours. Paying for parking in these larger airports tends to be more expensive, while in central Illinois, that's either very low cost or no cost at all. These are all economic and personal safety issues that we all have to weigh.
Yeah, and of course, greater risk in the car ride to the airport than anything you can take out of the airport itself. All right, let me take a moment to reintroduce Sheldon Jacobson, who is a professor of computer science at the Granger College of Engineering at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. We're talking about air travel in this busy, busy travel week. As I mentioned before, more than 50 million Americans expected to be traveling for Thanksgiving, 4 million of those by air between Wednesday and Sunday alone. Almost basically back up to levels before the pandemic. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. 800-222-9455. And let's get Steve from Chicago is on line 4. Steve, thanks for calling in.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call and joining the conversation. Just wanted to put in my comment. My wife and I flew just this weekend from Philadelphia back here to Chicago. And I just wanted to comment on what appeared to be, to me, complete inconsistency with the TSA, albeit I flew out, got to the airport Saturday about 6 a.m. I have never seen O'Hare that crowded in my life, and I'm from Chicago. But I walked through the screening process without taking off my belt, emptying my pockets, taking off my shoes. I did nothing. And compared that to Philadelphia, where we flew Sunday afternoon, it was relatively not busy. And they had everything. I almost had to strip down. They went through my bags. They threw out my shampoo and my shaving cream, which is fine. That's on me. But it just seemed that as busy as O'Hare was at the time, I don't want to say they were lax, but they were I just walked right through, whereas Philadelphia was painful.
Yeah, you felt moved along.
I just wanted to know if your guest wanted to comment on that, and I appreciate the show, and I'll hang up. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Steve. Appreciate the call. Sheldon, I wonder if you have a perspective on that.
Sure. The TSA strives to be consistent, whether you're flying out of Philadelphia, Washington, Reagan, Newark International, Chicago, here, you name it, they try to be consistent. And the difficulty is that ultimately the people who implement that consistency are human beings, and they don't always follow the procedures. So you may go to one airport and you're going to find that it's very, very rigorous. You're going to go to another airport that it's going to be lax. And you may wonder, what's going on here? The fact is, People make mistakes. We saw that recently in Cincinnati, where a TSA officer went through and allowed a box cutter to end up on an airplane, resulting in the flight end up being redirected to Atlanta on its way to Florida. These things happen. Mistakes do occur. And this person happened to experience the extremes of what TSA operations should be like. Did it result in any bad incident? No, it did not. The fact is, though, we want to see consistency. The TSA should deliver consistency. And in this particular case, they did not. And the TSA failed. That's all it comes down to. Simple observation.
Simple observation, yeah. Let's talk about some of the other recent news we've seen about of the airline industry and what that means for travelers. You noted in an opinion piece for The Hill newspaper last week that United and Delta Airlines are negotiating new contracts with their pilot unions. The latter's union has authorized a strike. What would that mean for travelers in the coming months?
Well, the good news is that it's not going to affect Thanksgiving because Thanksgiving is just a few days away. It could potentially affect Christmas, but I don't think it's going to. And the reason being is that the bad PR that comes with the pilots preventing flyers from reaching their destination, especially for the holidays, is not very good. However, you know, we have a lot of viruses that are circulating right now. Besides COVID, we have the influenza, we have RSV. A lot of people are just sick, and pilots can very conveniently call in sick, and it could interrupt a few flights. Are they going to do that on Christmas Day or Christmas Eve? I don't think they will, simply because they're also human beings and they want to help people. But at the same time, we may find some of the days between Thanksgiving and Christmas interrupted and disrupted. And also that veil of uncertainty gives the pilot unions leverage when they're negotiating with the airlines. So there's a lot of talk and chatter, but at the end of the day, I think it's going to be okay. The bigger threat is going to be weather. And that is so unpredictable, especially in the Midwest and the Northeast, when we have, you know, storms that can come in. If Thanksgiving weekend was the weekend we just went through, the weekend before Thanksgiving, there would have been a tremendous number of disruptions in the Northeast, especially around Buffalo, for example, Syracuse. It would have been absolutely crazy. But yeah. In essence, even though there are veils of threats of shutdowns and slowdowns of the pilots, the reality is, I don't think that will happen, but I would not be surprised if some or more people than normal call in sick. Whether it's legitimate or not, doesn't matter. For the traveler, they're saying, I want to get home. I want to get to see my grandparents. I want to see my family. That's what they're interested in.
You know, last week, the Department of Transportation fined six airlines, $7 million among them. Most are based abroad, but the U.S. carrier Frontier was on that list. The department also ordered the airlines to pay something like $600 million in refunds to customers who were owed them. What should people know about their rights if they've got a ticket for a flight that gets canceled?
Well, if you have a ticket and you have a confirmed seat, then you have, in fact, you've engaged in a contract with the airlines, and that means you will be on that flight. But the airlines know that some people don't show up. Sometimes it's intentional. They decide they don't want to travel. Sometimes it's just circumstance that they get a flat tire on the way to the airport and they just miss their flight. Because of that, the airlines don't want to let a seat go to a destination and take off without a passenger, because that is lost revenue forever. So they do something called overselling or overbooking the flights. When they do that, there is a chance that you may get to the flight and with 150 seats, there's 152 people who are booked. What do? They offer compensation, and this is usually in the form of a voucher, which has dollar value for a future flight and something equivalent. Now, if they can't get volunteers, then the federal laws kick in, and then you become basically an involuntary volunteer. You are being forced off the plane. And then, depending on how long it takes for them to take you to your final destination, be it 2 hours, 4 hours, or more, that will determine the value that they will give you in cash. You can request cash. Now, they may say, I'll give you a $1,000 voucher, but you're due $400 in cash. Which do you want? For a lot of people who travel a lot, I'd take a $400 voucher rather than $400 in cash. But that's an individual choice, obviously. We already have these rights in place based on the contract of the carriage contract, which the airlines abide to. And you can get a copy of that and read it, but you know, that's not very helpful. For the average person, know that if you have a confirmed seat and there aren't enough volunteers, you are going to be compensated. And all you have to do is ask. And the first line of defense may be, we can't do much. Well, the fact is they legally have to. And I have found from experience that the airlines are very good in offering very reasonable compensation when appropriate. The key is be pleasant and be nice. If you create an antagonistic relationship with the airlines, then they are more likely to go exactly by the rules, which may not actually be in your interest. If you create a friendly demeanor and are more cooperative, you may discover that they will actually give you even more than you expect.
That is good life advice in general right there. What final thought? We've only got about 30 seconds left, but any other recommendations to people looking to minimize their stress around air travel this holiday season?
You don't want to fly the last flight of the day because that is fraught with uncertainty. But out of regional airports, the first flight can be just as problematic because the plane that brought you in the previous day was the last flight of the day. So you have to kind of balance all of these things. The other thing is realize that the people who are flying you, they are missing their holidays to get you to your destination. So thank them for their service.
Sheldon Jacobson from the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us.
Well, thank you very much and have a great holiday.
Thanks, you as well. Sheldon Jacobson is a professor of computer science at the Granger College of Engineering, again, at U of I Urbana-Champaign. More to come after a short break. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us.